You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. Hope everyone is well, healthy, wearing a mask, not at a Belgrade disco, topless, which I suppose is where we ought to start. Jamie, I'm glad you are with me today. How's everything in your world?
It is good. I'm also not in a Belgrade club, dancing around in close quarters.
Shouting indoors. So that's a win. I had wanted to do a normal podcast. We were going to talk to Donald Dell, longtime agent. He had some very interesting thoughts about how to merge the ATP and the WTA. We were going to talk about the plans for the U.S. Open and tennis getting back, and there's some events this week. We were talking about Patrick Mouratoglou's event and the Charleston event, and then of course everything blew up metaphorically, and I guess you could say in a sense literally, with the news from the Balkans this weekend, which we should probably timestamp this. We are speaking on, what is today, Wednesday morning? Is that right?
That is correct.
So we are 72 hours into this, we'll kindly call it a narrative. I've spoken a lot about this. I've written about this. I will say, before we can talk specifics, I'm very surprised at the extent. I mean, this is really world news. I mean, I was getting calls from Al Jazeera and the BBC, and then I just saw Mary Carrillo was on MSNBC today. I mean, this has really become much more than a tennis story, for better or worse. I would argue worse. But this really has been the kind of story that's had ripples beyond the sport and beyond sports, period. I think a lot of people are sort of trying to figure out how we ease back to normal. I think we're starting to see some real sort of disparities in countries and even here in the United States with how this is not only being managed and not only what the data says, but just in terms of philosophy. So I think this story has really found its way into a much broader story. And this has become absolutely world news. I mean, this is as big a tennis story as we've had since there's been a match. And I guess, why don't we just start there? I mean, Jamie, let's start with top line impressions of the Adria Tour Novak Djokovic in the last 72 hours.
Yeah, you're right to say that tennis exhibitions don't normally get this much press. I think it's always a funny thing within tennis when people, you know, who aren't as familiar with the sport, they see results from an exo, whether it's early in the year, late in the year, and you know, somebody beats someone and most people just sort of shrug it off. But it's, as you said, really interesting to see how much this has really gone across the world and everyone is talking about it, and rightfully so, because this is a big issue. And I think it was from the get-go when we started to see the photos and the videos of everything that was happening between the hugging and everything that was happening on the court, and then of course everything that was happening all off the court, all of those images and those photos are really going to be the mark of this event, of this tournament. And Djokovic, whether or not he deserves all of the blame or not, will also be the face of this issue for a long time coming. He is the organizer of this event, of course, and also the oldest in terms of the players that was there. And for me, that was something that, you know, he really needed to use to his advantage. And, you know, the younger players, Zarev and Borna Koric and others, even Dimitrov, for what it's worth, you know, are younger than him and they look up to him. And for him to invite these players to come to this tournament and for him to organize this in the way that he did and to have the results that we had is just, it's not great. And I wish that the best tennis player, you know, the number one in the world right now, had thought a little bit more about how he was exposing all these people to unsafe conditions and took a little bit more time to think about what the results and the repercussions of this could have been.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think no one covered themselves in glory. I mean, there's already been a lot of finger pointing. Djokovic's father, having moved on from Federer to baby Fed, is now pointing fingers at Dimitrov as the culprit. I mean, this is just ugly stuff. I mean, I think we ought to pause here and say we do hope everyone makes a speedy and easy recovery. As Nick Kyrgios, who I wrote, Nick Kyrgios has turned into the wise man of tennis. I mean, Nick Kyrgios's thoughts on all of this have been a lot more reasonable and responsible than anyone else's. And, you know, Nick Kyrgios very rightly says this virus is not a joke. So right. Before we go further, let's be clear. We hope everybody makes a quick recovery from a virus that we know, you know, six figures over can be fatal. Having said all that, I think, I mean, it's sort of interesting in the grand scheme of things, people who are casual fans or not even sports fans at all, this is hubris and recklessness. And here is this athlete who somehow has been living in thick enough bubble so that he doesn't realize that you can pass this on to other people. And hey, viruses are really contagious and things like masks really work. I think in tennis circles, there also is this added layer of all of this Djokovic context. Pat McEnroe, I saw, said to Chris Clary that, look, let's be honest, Federer, Nadal, Serena ain't doing things like this. Mary Carrillo is on MSNBC today, was very outspoken about Djokovic in particular. This is, I think she said that the guy hasn't lost a match, but he's made error after error after error in this pandemic. And I think there is a Djokovic context, at least in tennis circles, where this is the guy who has thumbed his nose at science. This is someone, you know, he's just made his statements about what he thinks about vaccinations. He's made his statements about whatever it was, the positive energy affecting the water quality. He's already been in trouble in Spain for flouting social distancing. So, and this is, remember too, this is someone who was not supportive of the U.S. Open because he thought some of the procedures were too strict. Extreme, I think, was his word. So, exactly. You know, in a tennis context, there's a lot here that sort of redounds to Djokovic in particular. I mean, I guess I have a few questions I want to ask you as an elite athlete. I mean, one of them is just, I'm curious what kind of reception you think he gets in the locker room when tennis resumes. I mean, how much will this impact him, do you suspect, among his peers?
You always throw out this elite athlete designation. It's very funny. I think, you know, you talk about Nick Kyrgios, and, you know, I think something that he tweeted was that, you know, don't at me for anything that I've done that's been irresponsible or classified as stupid. You know, this takes the cake. And I think, you know, as you said, it's a really good point by Kyrgios, because this is, you know, for all the things that we've obviously exhausted talking about him, and he's done all these things that have made news and headlines, but this is a global pandemic. This is a serious issue. And I think for someone like Djokovic, who is supposed to be representing the players in terms of the council and, you know, really making these good decisions. And as we talked about, you know, only a few weeks ago, has actually done things that are very helpful for people on the tour, you know, with raising money and putting together this relief plan for the players in need because of the coronavirus. He cannot do that and then also not have repercussions for what he's done here. You know, you can't have it both ways with that. And I think, you know, some players will sort of question his leadership or question him, whether it's in the locker room or decisions he makes when the tour gets back on, because how could you not? Again, this is a player that's supposed to be representing you and looking out for your best interests. And while you know, all the players are not going to align on those interests, I think you want someone who at least has a little bit more, I don't want to say common sense, but when you look at the photos and the way that this event was put on, it really seems like there was a lot of common sense missing and a lot of deliberate disregard for the common things that we know about this virus and what it can do.
I mean, I think the words are important, and I think you're absolutely right that deliberate is what it was. I mean, people even said, look, are you sure you want to be doing this? And Djokovic sort of said, listen, I'm just following national protocol. Well, now we know that's not necessarily true. I mean, if you go on various websites and look at Serbia's protocol, they still talk about masks. They still talk about social distancing. Yeah. But there really was this element of self-harm, and this wasn't just negligence and oversight. This seemed like a conscious, I mean, I think it was Ben Rothenberg said, this is a conscious FU at anyone practicing these protocols. And I think, again, I mean, Djokovic is coming in for a lot of heat. I think that's completely appropriate. I think there is something really interesting here about the elite athlete, about someone who at some level you have to suspend conventional wisdom to do what he does. At some level, you know, you're down match points in a Wimbledon final and you have to hear the crowd saying your name and not Roger Federer's name. I mean, I think this fits into a bigger piece about the mindset of an athlete. And I just think that he at some level didn't connect the dots. I mean, he just didn't think that science applied. I mean, he has challenged conventional wisdom. He has challenged science. There's probably something at some level healthy and admirable about that, but that has bled into a complete disregard of the physical world to the point where it never dawned on someone that, A, even if you are unlikely to be seriously affected by this virus, others that you were in contact with are, and B, all of these stories about how this has spread. I mean, you see them topless indoors and shouting, and that's almost sort of the playbook for how to get this thing. I mean, you know, short of licking subway poles, I mean, that's about it's really sort of, I think, striking and revealing.
But you talk about Djokovic's mindset, and of course this, you know, he has this alternate view of things, as you said. You know, maybe his diet is different and he approaches the way he trains and the way he lives his life, which is fine, right? But he did not put this tournament on by himself. He did not do everything. You know, he organized it and he invited these players. But there were other people involved here that, you know, should also be taking some of the blame for not challenging that. You know, for him, I totally agree with you. I think part of what makes him so great is the things that he does that no one else can. And that's physical, but that's also mental. As you said, chanting the other player's name, or if he's just trying to overcome, we've seen him overcome so many mental challenges, even with injuries, all these things really do make an elite athlete great. And Djokovic has clearly shown that. But there are other people surrounding him that need to kind of show him an alternate view, or at least present, in this case, the glaring red flag issues that are there right in front of us, you know? And I just think that somebody along the way, for whatever reason, didn't say something or didn't, you know, challenge some of this. and I don't know exactly how everything was coordinated, but I think what Djokovic said at one point was that, you know, we miss our work and, you know, we're going to enjoy this. Everyone misses the normalcy that we had before this time, but that doesn't give anyone the right to put not only, you know, yourself, but others in danger. I mean, there were so many people that were fans at that event who also contracted the virus. So there's just so many layers and so many levels to this. And I just, again, the deliberate disregard for the planning of this event without strict protocols on the court, and then to leave the tennis court and act like the pandemic doesn't exist and sort of go back to those normal ways with parties and dancing in clubs and pickup soccer games. It's just all very wrong on very many levels.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
One thing I was struck by too was, again, Djokovic was a player that was really took issue with the U.S. Open limiting the size of this membrane, this entourage, this bubble. And what you realize is this guy is really insulated. And one thing that struck me was it was a real insight into just how sort of surrounded by support he is. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there was nobody on the inside who would have tapped him on the shoulder and said, you know what, maybe not a great idea here. Or, you know what, Novak, maybe you don't want to be playing shirts and skins basketball until you have positive tests from here. Maybe it's a little bit early to start going to the clubs. Again, he wasn't on a very important call, a very important player's call. And, you know, this is Noah Rubin has been very outspoken about this. The same time that was going on, he was playing soccer. I mean, the notion that nobody in his camp said, hey, listen, this is really something you ought not to do. I think that showed not just Djokovic in general, but that just sort of shows how much celebrities can be cosseted by the people around them. I mean, it just blows my mind that nobody within his camp could have gotten through to him to tap him on the shoulder. I thought that was a real revelation. Where do we go? Let's talk him. Let's talk Novak specifically first. I mean, does he recover from this?
Well, let's hope he, as you said, recovers.
Physically, yes. Let's hope he physically recovers. Assuming he physically recovers, does his image recover from this? I mean, it sounds like a dramatic question, but, you know, again, just play around on the internet and you can see that this goes way beyond tennis news.
Can he
get back from this?
What I think will happen is that everything we talked about that, as you said, people inside tennis circles know about him, some of the quirks and things, the way he approaches the game, the way he approaches his training and preparation. I think a lot of those things will come to light and may actually help him in this case to sort of explain a little bit how his views or something might be different. But I do think that in terms of, as you mentioned earlier, the players and perhaps his role on the board and just the way that people, I guess, trust his thoughts on larger issues may be affected. This pandemic and the issues connected to it, they're not going away. And tennis, as with other sports and other areas and other, you know, industries in the world, are going to be affected by it for many years to come. And I think this bump in the road for Djokovic will prove to be a very big one, because there are repercussions that, as you said, go beyond just tennis, beyond just him. It's global because of the people who came in from around the world to this event. I mean, I think he will get back, you know, to tennis, and he'll get back to playing and winning matches. But I do think that reputation-wise, trust-wise with his colleagues and players and people in the sport, I think he will be affected.
I do think, you know, on the one hand, you know, memories are short, and all players inevitably have some obstacles, and whether it's Andre Agassi or Serena, and they surmount them. I do think Nick Kyrgios has a point, though, which is, listen, I may have tanked a match. I may have served underhand and had a body shot at Rafa. I didn't put thousands of people's health and even lives at risk for my own self-glorification. I mean, I do think that this really sets quite a standard for irresponsible behavior, and it does. Next time people are outraged because Serena Williams shook hands first after winning, or even, you know, cracked her racket when she already had a point penalty. As far as sort of athlete sins go, boy, this would seem to loom pretty large. I feel like I should point this out. I spoke with tournament directors of other events and people at the USTA, and everybody is adamant that this is unfortunate and regrettable and irresponsible. A lot of people don't. Nobody minced words here about how they felt about Djokovic, but the flip side is they all stressed that their events will be radically different and much more responsible. So I do think we should point out that there's been some speculation that this could really jeopardize tennis's return, but you know, as of now, that doesn't seem to be the case.
I would add there that the larger issue with this event was not only what happened on the court. You know, there were hugs and there were group photos and there were all of these things that were, you know, there were fans next to each other, very close to each other, many of them unmasked. You know, there are so many things at the event, yes. But the players and the way that they were interacting and what they were doing off the court was just as bad. And that could happen anywhere. You know, the tournament itself does not have control over what the players are doing to an extent outside of the courts, you know, when they're done playing. But I think that is the differentiator here, that when you talk about these other events, not only will the tennis and the event itself be more strict, but hopefully the way that the players conduct themselves outside of that event will also be a little bit more strict and cautious, using this as the cautionary tale for what could happen if you decide that all of a sudden you miss normal life and you're just going to, we keep bringing it up, but Dan shirtless in a sweaty club somewhere. I just, that's for me, the what sort of set everything overboard. And I'm hopeful that the other events that happen now have this as a blueprint of what not to do, and hopefully it'll be better.
Yeah, we were talking with Mark Ein, who runs the DC event, and I would have said a week ago, I would have said he was joking, but he was serious. Like, our players will not be going clubbing in between their matches. No, I just think there's a lot to learn here, and there are a lot of lessons, and some of them are the obvious ones. Science is real, and biology is real, and they don't care what your world ranking is, and they don't care how many fans you have. But also, I think we got a real insight. I think we got a real insight into peer pressure. I mean, you mentioned Djokovic being older. I think all the players had agency, and it was disappointing that a few of these guys didn't say, "Yeah, wait a second. If I'm reading my news right, this isn't really consistent with how we ought to be behaving." But I think this was an interesting glimpse into peer pressure. I think this was an interesting glimpse into the mind of an athlete who clearly, first of all, is so selfish they are not realizing that even if they are not at the highest risk group, there's a lot of interaction and viruses spread from people to people. And again, it's sort of not realizing that the ball kid has a grandparent. And I also think we got a real glimpse into, at least pertaining to Djokovic, how absolutely insulated he is from the real world. I mean, again, the notion that no one was able to tap him on the shoulder and say, "I think it's time to reconsider this," I think that says an awful lot about just how insulated he is. And I think social media is an accelerant too. I don't know a whole lot of people objectively looking at this saying anything other than this was reckless and irresponsible. And yet there are still people that will defend him. And if you're in the certain social media silo, you might think nobody did anything wrong here. And, you know, his own father is already pointing fingers at Grigor Dimitrov. I mean, I think we're seeing a real glimpse of sort of just how insulated a celebrity's life can be. Having said all that, Djokovic has apologized. I thought his apology was certainly more than adequate. I think he's a smart guy. I also think this is someone who wants to be liked. This is not a guy who relishes the role of a villain. And you would hope damage control will be underway when he's healthy. I mean, again, I think one of the ironies, and I wrote about this, I mean, one of the ironies of all this is some athletes, some people, some celebrities just don't give a shit. Even in tennis, I mean, there's some players, Leighton Hewitt didn't give a shit. And I just want to win matches. If you don't like me, that's tough. Djokovic is the opposite. I mean, here's a guy who craves adulation, and that only seems to sort of add to the layers of the story that he's also so self-sabotaging at times. So you hope that he will learn from this. You hope he can get his name back. But right now, as Mary Carrillo said, hasn't lost a match this year, but man, has he made a lot of unforced errors during this pandemic. So there are happier topics we could talk about, Jamie. We have matches going on at Charleston. Actually, I got a text last night from a coach of one of the players there saying, if you're done bitching about Djokovic, maybe you could actually talk about some real tennis, which is a fair point. The U.S. Open, again, remains going to be some bumps to the road. And again, we're going to have to drink every time we hear the phrase fluid situation or case-by-case basis. But the U.S. Open is still on the calendar. There will be a wheelchair event. I just got an email telling me. The Tennis Hall of Fame is back open. I have to say that I've come back to Manhattan and things are opening up here. So it's not all doom and gloom, but as the cliche goes, we ain't out of the woods yet. And boy, did we get a reality check about the nature of this virus in the Balkans over the last 2 weekends, Jamie.
For sure. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, of course, there were a handful of top players along with Djokovic there playing, and you know, Zverev, Coric, others have also tested positive. So I think it will be interesting to see what players, you know, we've talked about this, what players decide to come play the U.S. Open versus the French Open, especially given that the recovery time for this fluctuates based on, you know, how serious, how your body reacts to it, your age, your health, so many different things. So we of course hope that everyone has a speedy recovery, but this could affect training. This could affect how they're preparing for the U.S. Open if it was something they were considering to do. So I'll be interested to see how this affects the U.S. Open and the pool of players who ultimately end up in the draw.
No, I think that's a really good point. I was talking to Pat McEnroe yesterday, who, you know, he's, I don't think I'm violating any confidences. He's been pretty open about this. Who's had, who basically tested positive. I think he tested negative for the antibodies, but tested positive. But he's talked about this and has done some videos, and he said, you know, he's feeling better, thankfully, but even now he still feels a touch. So when he talks for a long period of time, or it's almost like he's gone on a long run when he does his podcast. So there are some lingering effects months later, and we haven't really spoken about this, but you know, Grigor Dimitrov was a semifinalist last year and beat Roger Federer. Victor Troitsky's at the end of his career, but has always been a dangerous player. Borna Coric would probably be seated. Dana Vekic would be seated, and Novak Djokovic is a world number one player. So, you know, if nothing else, we're talking about five players who could make, you know, materially significant players who in late June are positive for COVID. So this may also obviously have some real impact on the U.S. Open, just on terms of the draw and in terms of tennis results. So it has been it's been a busy week of tennis. A week ago, we were speaking with guarded happiness, I would say with some ambivalence, but with guarded enthusiasm about the 2020 U.S. Open. And a week later, this has not been our happiest podcast, Jamie.
No, it has not. But hopefully, we're turning the corner here, and hopefully there'll be some brighter days ahead. As you said, I think there'll be a lot of asterisks and sort of different things that will have to be fluid. Of course, like you see with the PGA Tour now, more, you know, there's a few people as they've started that have tested positive and people withdrawing here and there. So as these events start to pop up in the U.S. in anticipation of the U.S. Open, I think the USTA and players in general are going to have to be pretty flexible and really take everything into consideration. I have to say, I feel for all of these players who have been out of work for all this time and, you know, just in this limbo we've talked about of you don't know what you're training for and when things are going to return. And now it's a really tough position to be in as an athlete. We talk about the Orlando bubble for the NBA and Major League Baseball, you know, finalizing a plan there. And as an athlete, especially as an individual athlete, when the onus is really on you to make the decision, it's a really tough one, you know, to really decide whether or not you're willing to travel to a place where the virus may be suddenly exploding. It's a really tough situation to be in. And, you know, we applaud the USDA for coming together with a plan here, but I'm still not 100% certain that we'll have a US Open for sure just yet.
Nor I. And again, literally as we recorded this podcast, word came down that New York is considering having people coming from states with high incidence quarantine for 14 days. I don't know if that applies to athletes, but that's a potential that's a potential roadblock. Yeah, we're a long way from day one of the 2020 U.S. Open. And yeah, the last few days have not been great for the sport, but hopefully some lessons will be learned there. Jamie, I've got to run or run on to another Zoom call anyway. Nobody's running much of anywhere, I fear, these days. It's been a pleasure as always. Thanks for the discussion. Next week, Donald Dell and merging tours. Back to some more meat and potatoes tennis talk, which we could all use after a rough week for the sport. But thanks, thanks for the time. We hope everyone recovers, and we hope we're talking happier topics and more responsible topics going forward.
Sounds good. Thanks, John.
All right, that does it for this week. Thanks, as always, to Jamie. Again, this was not a particularly enjoyable podcast, but this was big news that we felt we ought to address. We'll be back next week with a more conventional tennis podcast. She's Jamie Lasanti. I'm John Wertheim. Thanks for listening. Continue with your guest suggestions. We got in a few last week that were great. Subscribe, leave a review. It always helps. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever your podcasts are sold, and we'll do it again in 7 days.